When did you arrive in Scotland, and how old were you there?
As I said, I estimate I arrived in Scotland about 1949. And how old was I? Well,
you must have been about 25 then.
That's right.
And how did you come to Scotland, and why did you come here?
Well, my mother had remarried recently, so they suggested, my mother must have, that I should come to Scotland and try my luck from here.
Was he Scottish?
No, he's not a Polish. But obviously, he's much, much older. He's long, long dead now. Mm. But he had lived here for many years.
Right. Where did you stay when you first came?
In Dunfermline, in Ayr.
What was your impression of Scotland and the people when you first
arrived?
Well,
I said, I thought Glasgow was grimy but great. That's good alliteration. Mm. Grimy but great. And the people were wonderful. I didn't meet much racism. In fact, I found none. But I did. I was aware of the hatred that the Catholics and the Protestants carried for each other and of the effect it had.
And you think it made it easier, in fact, to be something else?
Oh, yeah, they took no notice of being Jewish.
That's good. Did you mix with... Well, obviously you mixed with Jewish and non-Jewish
yes.
people. With the Jewish people that you met here, did you mix with them through the refugee centre?
No, entirely independently.
Well,
in fact, I didn't know any refugee centres. I didn't know about the kinder transports either. So I went from Milan to the Brenner Pass, where the Italians whipped me off the train and said my papers weren't in order. And they kept me for another 24 hours. I stressed that because that 24 hours delay meant there was no one in London waiting for me. So there I was, 15 years old, skint, hungry, lonely, terrified, and no English. Not one word, not a word. And some refugee organization picked me up and took me overnight to some pretty grotty shelter. But the next morning, this limousine turned up.
So you were living with Mr. and Mrs. Reigate, and did you arrange this errand job with the German Jewish Aid Committee at Woburn House?
That was almost the same thing as I'd done in Milan. And Mrs. Reigate helped me to meet these people at Woburn House.
Right.
And I was an errand boy there again, a filing clerk.
And what age would you be by
15.
Still 15.
It was only happened over a few months.
Right, right.
I became a filing clerk and I used to run errands and do a bit of filing. And amongst my jobs was when files made up of people's cases, mm-hmm. case files.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I got them, I used to have to file them in alphabetic order. And I got my mother's file. So I used to promote it to the top of the pile all
Absolutely.
The time. And that is as far as I knew. I helped her in that sense, but after mm-hmm. that, I don't know what happened. Anyway, I was errand boy. I even met the famous Lady Reigate. I think she was the wife of the vice-chancellor, not vice-chancellor, the Queen's representative in India.
Right.
I'll think of the word for it in a minute. Anyway, she was a big shot. I remember she stopped me in the corridor, big moment of my life. And she said, "What are you doing here, young man?" By which time I knew few words of English. And I explained, and she gave me half a crown. Which was valuable.
Right.
I had this big silver coin in my hand. I felt rich. I'd never really had money of any kind, except pocket money from Reigate. But I did this job till I left there to go. Next is Mrs. Reigate. Mr. Reigate were wonderful with me, but I think I must have been a little bit hard to live with. I mean, I wasn't exactly a disciplined youngster. So I dare say she got tired of me after a few months. I hate to admit it, I think she did. I used to have to prune the roses, and I didn't even do that willingly.
You're a teenager, and also you'd gone through so much getting there. I think it must have been quite a contrast to be one minute involved in really sort of survival techniques, and the next minute you're meant to go back to being a boy.
A boy, exactly.
That age.
They had a little girl of three, and I sort of had to help look after her. There was a nanny. Mm-hmm. I mean, the household was incredibly wealthy. Incredibly wealthy. The house was in overlooking Hampstead Heath near Bishop's Avenue.
Right.
Wildwood Road, I think it was called. A stupendous house with views over the heath. And for my part, it was wonderful. I had a room to myself with shelves and shelves of books, and I like reading. I did even then. So I was quite happy, except for the roses. And I was learning my English. I must have been a pain in the tonsils. Anyway, eventually she got me a job, and that meant the end of the Woburn House job.
Right.
And I was sent to this farm in Berkshire, and that was a poultry farm. Now, I must tell you right here, I hate chickens. I hate them with a proud, undying devotion. I loathe them because of that job. It was a 16-acre farm on a very steep slope, and most of the damn chickens were at the top, and we lived at the bottom. In those days, I had shoulders. I used to carry 100-weight bags of grain or feed or whatever up the hill, feed those loathsome animals. By that time, I would have killed them gladly. We kept on going like that. That was my life. Carry the feed up, coming back down, maybe feed the horse, whatever that was. I'm not a farm person, mm-hmm. not an animal person, so it wasn't great. I was all right with them. I did well. And Mr. Hundleby, would you believe that name, Hundleby, the farmer, took me aside one day, by which time I was managing pretty well with English, and he said, "You have been a good boy, Bert." They called me Bert. "We are going to give you rise from your half crown a week. We're going to put you up to £1 a week. And I thought, my God, I'm a millionaire. I'm a millionaire.
That's,
he said,
that's
but
quite
we're going, well, we're going to deduct 15 shillings of board and lodgings.
Right, okay.
5 shillings. But the life was good there. I just loathed the chickens. There was an incident. The farmer had acquired some wonderful cockerels, a special breed. And he was very proud of those things. And I was told to move them from one pen to another. You can carry them like 4 at a time if you do it the right way. And I must have damaged one of them. And it was lame. And I was terrified that I had done this damage. That's something I should have mentioned. I was living with fear all the time. I never lost my fear from Italy. Mm-hmm. And so I wouldn't even ask a copper for directions. I was terrified of most things. So I've damaged this bird. Now, don't want to tell the farmer. So I took it to a shed and thump it over the head with a hammer, a good thump on the head, and put it in an overturned water bucket, and left it. That night was a night of nightmares like I've never had before or since. I seem to remember hearing fire engines and police and God knows what coming after me. It was that. I'm sure that's imagination, mm-hmm. but that's what I remember. Anyway, next morning I went to inspect the damage, and the damn thing was still alive. So I gave it the thumping over the head procedure again. This time it was dead. Unfortunately, the farmer had a dog, and the dog kept sniffing around the bird. I tell you, the experience of the farm was not great, except I was well fed. And then my mother, as I told you, had meantime arrived in Britain, and she'd gone to join our family in Nottingham. You know, with refugees, there tends to be a clustering.
Yep.
And our cluster was in Nottingham. My uncle was there, my aunt, several other cousins, and so on. So she went to stay with them, and then when she felt that I'd had enough of the farm, she got me out of there and took me to Nottingham.